With that, we'll call the board back to session. We'll go to agenda item 7, which is received and filed. We'll accept a motion in a second.
We have one more.
Oh, yes. I don't know why I crossed that one out. Laura.
Maybe it was a subliminal.
Yeah, and Dan. Overview of SB 998. I'm sorry about
that. If you recall, this is the legislation that passed in 2018 that requires additional steps to be taken by the water agencies to avoid residential shutoffs. And so Dan and Charles Camaro have done a great deal of work on this. As was mentioned earlier, we hosted a workshop for all the agencies in the region to basically coordinate the way that we're implementing this. And so Dan's going to give you, and Charles will give you an overview on that today. So please.
Thank you, Paul. So as Paul mentioned, this is a summary of the SB 998 legislation that we will soon be implementing. I'll give a brief overview of how this came about, and then Charles will provide some of the details as to how we plan to implement our processes to address the requirements. So as you may know, this legislation was signed by the governor in September of last year. It applies to public water systems with greater than 200 service connections, so obviously that applies to Eastern. And really the objective is straightforward and simple. Minimize the number of Californians who lose access to water service due to their inability to pay. Pretty straightforward. There are some basic requirements that we will need to implement prior to February 1st of 2020 is when this becomes effective. So those key conditions that apply to this legislation are, first of all, we are required to provide a customer with 60 days required before shutoff for non-payment. And then to avoid non-payment, and Charles will get into some of the detail of how we're going to implement this, there are really three criteria to avoid the shutoff. A customer needs to demonstrate that they are below 200% of the federal poverty level, and we can help qualify that through some existing programs that they may be enrolled in, such as the Utilities Care Program or CalWORKs, and that sort of thing can be used to help assess the financial condition of a particular customer that's requesting non-shutoff. In addition to that, a customer is required to have medical certification that being discontinued water service would provide life-threatening or serious health threat. I don't know how that couldn't be, but that's part of the requirement. And then also the customer must agree to enter into an amortization plan, so a payment plan, basically, for their outstanding balance. Those are the three criteria that will enable a customer to not be shut off. So any questions on those before I turn it to Charles for how we plan to implement this at Eastern?
Sure. The 60-day requirement, is that for only those customers that fit in those categories?
We believe it applies, Charles and I were actually just discussing that, we believe this applies to all customers, and in reading the legislation, it appears to apply to all customers, but we are going to clarify that before going forward. The decision might be, if that component of the legislation only applies to those that are 200% below the poverty level, it'd be a decision and criteria for the district as to do we implement that for only those customers and the complexity of having different schedules. But our understanding is that it applies to everyone.
Well, isn't there a practical aspect to that as well? If you're giving someone a notice of a shutoff 60 days beforehand, and then you communicate with the customer to find out the inability to pay in the medicals, you wouldn't know that until after you filed the notice. So
yeah,
you wouldn't know whether to give them the long notice or the short notice, depending on their income level, because unless they're repeat offenders, you haven't acquired that data yet.
Right. So to answer your question, our understanding is that it applies to everyone. And then
from a practical standpoint, it probably is going to have to.
Exactly.
And then the 60 days is actually 90 days or something, because it's 60 days from the...
That's right, and that affects them from their not being able to pay. That's right.
Okay.
So on the medical part, yes. I mean, so that what do they have to notify us? I mean, I don't really want to be in the business of getting people's personal medical information. On the other hand, if, can I just call you up and say I have a medical condition?
And that's part of the decisioning that we need to make as we implement, is what are we going to require from the customer? Those are the provisions of the bill. Do we require that? Are we going to allow them to self-certify? The financial aspect is one of the things Charles will share with you, is how do we verify that they're 100%.
So, does that become a policy decision of Eastern on what is a medical condition, or has the state laid out for us what is a life? I mean, to me, if you don't have water, that's a life-threatening medical condition.
Exactly. I think that's the ambiguity here. But as it's written, mm-hmm. it effectively states that a medical provider, medical services provider, has to certify that the customer would be in a life-threatening or serious health condition.
It's already been signed
without
by the governor.
Oh, yeah. Which, to your point.
But again, it's very, very murky as far as I'm concerned as to what people have
but
to
I think
do.
We can establish those criteria. For example, we need to have a doctor's note or something from a medical, okay. You know,
right.
And we could even have a form of that we want filled out, something. You know, so we'll have to come up with those implementations.
Okay, so we're actually in the driver's seat as far as coming up with the criteria.
The hows are left.
The hows are left.
That's right. And Charles will speak a little bit to those things. So, with that, I'll
so who at the state oversees this?
Okay.
Because now is the time for us to ask all the questions.
There is a requirement through this legislation to post the results on our website. So there will be a requirement to identify how many customers were shut off.
Through the State Water Resources Control Board, too. That has to be reported.
Right. So would we want to be asking these questions of the State Board now before we put it on the website? Have them... No, I'm honest. I think that they need to respond now to our questions before we put it on the website, making our own assumptions. They need to tell us what we need to be doing to comply with this program.
I would be careful what you ask for. I would prefer to have the discretion to implement this, how we want to implement that within the law. And then I don't think we want to, just my personal opinion is I don't think we want to go to the state and say, how do you want the doctor's note to look? I think we want to have the discretion to be able to do that.
And to Paul's
I just think that's probably a better place, unless it's a complete ambiguity in the law, which we're not seeing.
That's right.
I would think we'd want to have some discretion and maintain that discretion. And as we know, the State Water Resources Control Board can be overly prescriptive on things, and I would hate to have them issue some interpretation that's something that's more difficult for us to implement and reduces our flexibility.
And I'll just mention that that's why these regional meetings are really helpful, because we're actually being able to gauge what others are doing, and I think we as can come up with a consensus and be consistent.
So we're all going to be consensus? I mean, we're all going to be consistent?
That's the goal. Yes.
Our goal is to try and be consistent within this region of water districts.
Right.
Okay.
Obviously a lot to cover, so I'm going to turn that over to Charles with how we're moving forward with how we're going to do this, and then if there are any questions, we can follow up.
Chuck Sullivan, members of the board. So as Dan mentioned, a couple key provisions here, picking up on the 60-day requirement, just carrying on with the conversation that we were just having. So the requirement is that a water provider may turn off water only if a customer has been delinquent for 60 days and will notify the customer no less than 7 days prior to discharge. So one of the early decisions that we as a team have come up with is, when does a 60-day clock start? And as Laura mentioned, in the workshop that we had, this was a great conversation that we had with the regional agencies, and there was consensus in how folks are starting that 60-day clock, if you will. So for Eastern, our proposal is at day 22, right after the bill due date, is when we will start that 60-day clock. And as you can see on the screen here, that would extend our current delinquency process from 50 days to day 82. So then, what are some of the business impacts of that extension? So there's an additional 32 days to our current delinquency process. As Paul was mentioning, one of the things we want to ensure that through that delinquency process, we're notifying the customer through and through, so that they're well aware of where they stand with the district and their past due amount. So additional mail notices and additional phone calls to those customers so they know, again, where they stand. Additionally, so I've added another 32 days. One of the things that I have to talk with Mike Malone is through this runway, and it's a little hard to see on this table here, there's two additional bills that will generate in that delinquency timeline. So working with IS to ensure that from a bill generation standpoint, that the rules are pretty clear and there's no overlap there, so as to not create confusion with what the customer owes. Any questions with that before we move on to the second provision, key provision? So the next one is, Dan was mentioning, it has to do with verification and the customer agreed to enter into a repayment plan or amortization plan. So the bill reads, a water system shall not discontinue residential service for non-payment if all of the three conditions are met. And that's key, all of these conditions have to be met. So again, the financial component, the customer or member of the household is on some sort of assistance program. Dan has mentioned CalWORKs, CalFresh, some examples there. Or their annual income is 200% below the federal poverty line. Next condition there is the medical. We just had a discussion about that. And we'll continue to identify how best do those customers vert or certify that, that they fall within that medical condition. And then the last piece of this is that they agreed to enter into a repayment plan of what's past due. I think it's also important to note that you know, the bill does state that should a customer break the amortization plan or not maintain future payments, pretty much all bets are off and we can move forward with discontinuation of service. So that's key to note with this, that the customer has to maintain the repayment of whatever's past due and also maintain future billing. Payments to ensure that they stay in good standing with the provisions. So some of the discussions that we had about the financial verification, and we already started that, is so do we want to do that internally or are there third-party providers out there that offer these services? And so weighing those pros and cons, you know, obviously the third party, there is cost to that. Doing it internally, we already talked about that. Dr. Salsky just mentioned, you know, the exposure to that personal information coming to us. So we want to ensure that we frame this, we frame it in a way that we limit the exposure if we do it internally. And also, you know, considering what the implications there are from a staffing perspective. Some other key conditions that were also listed that are also listed in the bill is there are some language requirements, and this one we have in place. You know, it's the discontinuation of service for non-payment to be listed in the key in the six primary languages that are out here, and at least 10% of people residing in the service area. Our language is spoken by 10% of folks in the service area. Now that I mentioned we have this already, we might just have to update some of that language on those, on those notices. Next key condition is an appeal process. The bill does call for a formal appeal process, and during that appeal process, it states that the customer will not be disconnected from our payment. So we know, again, we're discussing that, and it could be, what is a formal appeal? Is it a phone call to the customer service department? Do they come to the front counter? Do they submit something in writing, and what that turnaround time for is in 24 hours. So those are the things that we're considering with that appeal process. Some other conditions, there is a language in there about reconnect fees. Now, this the reconnect fees on the screen here only apply to those customers that fall below the federal poverty line. And our recommendation on this, as we're thinking through this, is to apply this to all customers. That way, you know, Dan mentioned trying to maintain two streams of reconnect fees and processes for those that fall under the poverty line and those that do not fall under the poverty line. So our recommendation would be to apply it across the board to all customers as recommended in the bill. And then finally is you know, the requirement to post how many disconnects we complete due to non-payment on our website, and our recommendation is we'll put that in the transparency section of our website. So next steps, we'll continue to work with the core team that we've pulled together that's working on this, folks from customer service, finance, PG&A, obviously IT, we'll continue to work on that. And our plan is to have the business requirements ready for IT to review by this July. We talked about the workshop that we had on site. It was very successful. Thank you, Laura and Devin, for attending. And again, you know, the goal there is to gain some consensus in how we're reading the bill and implementing the bill with the local agencies that were somewhat in alignment. IT has committed to have the technology changes implemented by October of this year, at which time we'll return back to the board in November with another update prior to go live. And then the bill, as Dan mentioned, implementation, we should comply by February 2020, and we believe we'll be ready by that. So with that, I'll try and answer the questions that you have.
How much was the reconnect fees today?
Well, it's on that chart. Why don't you go
yes,
back?
It's $55 today, and the bill is.
It's $55 currently. They're capping it at $55. The after hours reconnection fee, they're capping at $150. It's currently. We currently have that at $250.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Okay. So,
slide 7, the spreadsheet on. Federal poverty guidelines. Do we have any idea what our demographics are? How do we fall in here?
Yeah, so I fall on the admin committee. This question did come up, and I worked with Turner, and he provided me some data from 2017 census. In Riverside County, what we learned was the poverty level is 12% of all residents in Riverside County. That doesn't account for the EMWD service areas, the county of Riverside, is about 12% of the population is listed as in poverty.
But again, this is 200% of the federal poverty level.
That's good.
So $51,000, $500 annual income for a family of four. If you look at the census blocks in our service area, we think 32% of the census blocks have disadvantaged communities. So it's we're going to have to do the math on that, but it could be fairly significant. And, you know, I think there's a couple of things to follow up on this, if I might. You know, one, I've spoken to the board before about the study we're doing with UC Riverside on actual affordability of water in our service area, where we're looking at the affordability of water using an EPA metric, which essentially established that if your water bill exceeds 2% of your median household income, that it's considered to be an affordability challenge. Sewer and water is 4.5%. And so we've had UC Riverside look at our customer and our customer base, particularly with respect to our rate structure, and look at our rate structure relative to that question of affordability. And they found if customers stay within budget, the number of customers that really trigger that affordability threshold is around 2%, so it's very low. So again, we're going to use that in some of our advocacy, but I think to get your, I think the point that you're making is the amount of people who will be eligible for this program, I believe, are going to be way above those who are having affordability problems. And I think that's something we certainly want to go back and look at. The other thing I'd like to just mention is the State Water Resources Control Board is holding workshops right now looking at low-income rate assistance. That's the other component where they're going to require public agencies to have low-income rate assistance programs, and they're looking at actually using, and the desire is to get the water tax in place for the failing water systems, and they're looking at potential increment on top of that that would be sent to the state to provide low-income rate assistance through the water agencies. UCLA's been contracted to do the study. They're looking at an increment between $5.50 per service connection per month and $35. So when Secretary Crowfoot at AQUA said, "I get it, you know, you're concerned that the state is going to establish a public goods charge or a water fee and then add things on top of it," I think they do get it, and that's exactly what they're intending to do. But another part of it is what they're looking at is also called a WCAP, or a Water Crisis Assistance Program. So they'd have low-income rate assistance. That would be about $380 million a year the state needs to raise for that, and then about another $300 million they'd like to raise for this Water Crisis Assistance Program, what the Water Crisis Assistance Program is designed to do is it's a third party that's established by the state. So if a customer can't pay their bill, they can call up this third party administrator. That third party administrator can access money from the state, and then that third party administrator would then pay their water bill for them. So it's interesting. It would give them a way. On one hand, it sounds like if we're going to have to pay for it, that, you know, through again yet another increment on the water tax, if it got in place, it's fairly negative. On the other hand, if we're getting paid and we're not having to shut people off, that's what they're trying to avoid. So the state is very, very interested in this. I think there's going to be another wave of legislation that comes out of this. We're attending, obviously, and participating very heavily in these workshops, Danielle and myself. But there's a number of other things related to SB 998. So I just want to leave the board with the notion that this is kind of not the end of it. We are going to see a low-income rate component and potentially this water crisis assistance program as well. And sorry to depress everybody before lunch.
So, Charles, I mean, I just want to say I think you've done an excellent job on this. I mean, you've been handed a set of circumstances you didn't volunteer for, and you have come up with, I think, a pretty good program. I think we certainly do need to refine it as we were discussing. My final question is, if I don't know, it's a legal question, if ultimately we get stiffed on a bill, does that eventually go on a property tax somewhere, or do we just eat it?
Yeah, that's one of the things we're considering. So currently we do not add anything to our customers' property tax rolls. But in the workshop, it sounded like our local agency, that's a pretty common practice. So Lauren, how we're chatting about that,
that's something we're interested in. In addition to the state income tax.
Yes.
There's some agencies, because that actually is a little bit more aggressive, because mm-hmm. you get your money sooner versus over waiting for the land to be sold, right?
Yeah,
so we're going to look into that, because several of, I think Rancho does it?
Rancho does it.
Yeah, and so does another city. So we're going to look into that.
So in other words, if I didn't pay my water bill and yet I'm getting a state income tax refund, that would come back to Eastern before I got my money. Or if I had a piece of property that I didn't pay my water bill on, I sold my property in escrow, we would get something.
You could have a lien against it.
We could have a lien against it.
So that'll be a part of this program.
Yeah, and we currently do lien properties, but to your point, Dr. Pauly, it's only when the property sells is when we do get that money back.
Okay. So there's some remedies through those means of getting our cash flow back
for the
water that we have provided for people that they failed to pay for. So,
At Rancho, if you're a landlord, if you have a house and you lease it to somebody else and then they don't pay the water bill, you pay.
Yep.
And if you don't pay, they put on your tax. So
yes.
And with Rancho, the one?
Yeah, Jason Martin was here, and we've been very connected with him. He's been sharing some of those practices that we'll consider here at this time.
Were they the ones also that said they're going to start the 60-day on the day the bill is being sent out?
No, I think that was the team that was on the set, and that was the city of Corona.
Yeah. Some agencies are being pretty aggressive about this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very aggressive with the timeline.
But back before I was on the board, so it's a long time ago.
A long time ago. You were reading meters?
Yes. Ted Gilbert's director's advisory committee, and they were discussing having a low income rate. And at the time, somebody from staff, I don't remember who they were, came to the DAC, and they said they contacted Edison, and Edison said they went back, you know, with their customers who had the low rate, went back 2 years, they found out like only half of them still applied or, you know, could qualify under the lower rate. So is this going to be an ongoing thing we have to monitor every year, have some new verification of their income?
If that's part of our assessment, how often do we do it? There's self-certification, and then do we audit them? So there's all kinds of decisions.
Yeah.
Well, I would think, and we have to talk about it, but, you know, if we have a customer account that, you know, in 1 year they are late pay and we have to avoid shutoff, and they come forward with the income evidence and in you know, the medical verification, and then 2 years go by and the same account has problems, I would think we would have to ask for all that all over again.
No, I was just going to echo that, Paul. Our recommendation is event-based.
Right.
So
event-based.
So they'll certify at that particular moment. Once they're satisfied with their amortization, they're back in good standing, then they're good. And should it happen again down the road, we would ask them to recertify.
Right. And that would get to your issue, Director Slauson, that if they did have a change in their income, we don't want to give them kind of a perpetual fee pass.
Yes.
But they'd start the process over again.
Exactly.
After.
Yeah. Exactly.
It could take a lot of administration to manage this. So.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll be ready.
All right. Yeah. Thank you, Charles.
Charles.
Thank you, Dan.
Okay. With that, we'll go to agenda item 7, which is receive and file. Unless anybody needs to pull anything, we'll accept a motion and a second for approval of items 7A through 7C.
Approval.
Second.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. With that, we'll go to agenda item 8, which is the calendar review. Nicole?
Good morning, President Sullivan, members of the board. There are no new events attached to this calendar report. So we'll move to page 2 to the board's master calendar for the next 3 weeks. Tomorrow, May 16th at 3:30 p.m., we have the joint committee meeting with Western. And just a note for Director Slauson and Sullivan, this meeting will be held at Western this time.
Right.
On Friday, May 17th to Sunday, May 19th, the annual Solar Cup event will be held at Lake Skinner. And as you may be aware, you've been informed by email that there is a detour, there's a road closure for attendees. And we've emailed a map to you for those who will be affected by that this weekend.
Is there any special entrance for water agencies to avoid the road closure? Randy, are you aware of it? Okay.
And on Friday, May 17th, the Moreno Valley Hispanic Chamber of Commerce will be holding its installation and awards event. The district is a sponsor. Director Slauson will be honored. He will be in attendance, along with Kevin Pearson. And that's at 6 p.m.
Oh, okay.
You're being honored. You better
show. Maybe it's a joke. That's
right. Very wonderful. Monday, May 20th at 11 a.m., there is a CalDSAL Executive Committee teleconference on Director Pauly's calendar. And on Monday, the 20th as well, we have the Hemet San Jacinto Water Master meeting here at our office at 4 p.m. Tuesday, May 21st, the SAPA Commission will meet at 9:30 a.m. for its regular meeting. Director Sullivan. On Wednesday, May 22nd, Director Sullivan has his update meeting with General Manager Jones at 7:30 a.m. here in Paris. Followed by at 9:30 a.m. we have a facility tour with SAPA Commissioner Harrison on Director Sullivan's calendar as well. On May 22nd at 1:30 p.m. we have the DVL MOI Implementation Committee meeting. Director Record will attend, and that's being held here at the district. Thursday, May 23rd. The California Agriculture Gaining Ground Through Innovation and Collaboration event will be held in Riverside. Director Record will be the moderator. That event runs from 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. The district is a sponsor, and seats are available if anyone else is interested in attending. On May 23rd at 3:30 p.m., the Board Operations and Engineering Committee meeting will meet for Directors Slauson and Sullivan. The Met Committee meeting will be held Tuesday, May 28th, and that's on Director Record's calendar. Wednesday, May 29th at 7:30 a.m., Director Slauson has his update meeting with Paul Jones in Moreno Valley. And at 2:30 p.m. on the 29th, Director Record has his update meeting with Paul Jones. Just before the Planning Committee meeting, which is at 3:30 p.m., Directors Corona and Record. On the evening of May 29th at 6 p.m., Director Sullivan will attend the Paris Menifee Student of the Year program. Thursday, May 30th at 6:30 p.m., the Solar Cup recognition event will be held here at the district in the boardroom, and Directors Corona, Polly, and Sullivan are scheduled to attend that event.
Could you please put that on the calendar?
Absolutely. Thank you. On Friday, May 31st, the annual Orange County Water Summit will be held in Anaheim, and it runs from 7:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. Directors Polly and Sullivan will attend along with Paul Jones. And we do have seats available under the district sponsorship if anyone else would like to join them. On Monday, June 3rd, Director Polly has his bi-monthly update meeting with Deputy General Manager Laura Nomura at 7:30 a.m. here in Paris. And on Monday, June 3rd as well, the WR COG Executive Committee will meet at 2 p.m. Director Slauson. Tuesday, June 4th, the SOPA Commission will meet at 9:30 a.m. for Director Sullivan. And on Tuesday, June 4th, we have a joint meeting with Rancho California Water District at 2 p.m. And that will be held at Rancho's office. And that's for Director Corona and Director Record. And just a reminder that before the next board meeting, June 5th at 7 a.m., we have the Employee Appreciation Event. Moving to page 4, we have some future dates, events for the board's interest. If you're seeing anything listed that you'd like more information on or that you'd like to attend, please let me know. The upcoming board meetings are on schedule. And on page 5, we have the committee meetings listed and joint interagency meetings. Just to note that this month's executive committee meeting was canceled. And the next meeting that will be held will be June 20th. The executive committee will meet on June 20th at 7:30 a.m. Joint interagency meetings are listed. And on the last page, you have the out-of-office and holiday schedule. Are there any additions or questions on the calendar?
Thank you.
Okay, with that, we'll go to the director's calendars review. Steve?
Okay. I had my update meeting with Paul the other day. That was a good meeting. The Rancho meeting was canceled. So they are going to have that meeting tomorrow, so I will be going to that one. So, yeah, that's all I have.
Okay. Randy.
Aqua Eastern well represented. I caught Paul's panel. It was good. It's a lot of good information. And just a ton of meetings outside the Aqua schedule for me, but Santa Clara and IID and contractors and CDP contractors. And so anyway, good conference. And that was one of the meetings of the Imperial Irrigation District at Aqua May 8th. And we had a Delta Conveyance Finance Authority Executive Committee meeting on May 9th. And another meeting tomorrow of the full conveyance board.
Okay. Phil.
Sure, I had both a good meeting with the general manager and the deputy general manager. I was not able to attend the Winchester MAC this past Wednesday. And we had a good meeting with the Domenigone Basin Group, although I would like to see some of the data get a little more up-to-date. I think we're a little slow in getting some of that, but the general participants seem to be happy with the process, so we simply act as a host for that meeting, and I'm sure there's more to come on the topic.
Good. Okay, I had an update with Paul and executive staff on the city of Hemet issues. Paul and I attended the Elsinore Valley's last board meeting for General Manager John Vega, which I think was very well received after talking to a couple of them at Aqua. Had a nice outreach meeting with April talk about the things that we can do jointly. And the spring conference, I thought, was a very good conference. I'll just echo Director Record's comments that Paul's panel that he had, I think, opened a lot of people's eyes, and hopefully there'll be some constructive things that come out of that dialogue between everybody. So, with that, we have any comments from the directors for any future agenda items? Hearing none. Council, do we have cause for a closed session?
Yes, we do, Mr. Chair. We have two items. One is existing litigation, EMWD versus Exeter Alessandro, and the second, which was added to the agenda today, is item 10B, which is one item of potential litigation.
With that, we'll adjourn to closed session.